Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing on this fantastic Friday?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias, wild week that it's been in basketball. A fun draft night. It is time to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up. Lots of stuff has happened this week. We got some trades. We got some draft night trades. We naturally had draft selections on the W front. An interesting slate of games from last night in which, we've seen closer games. But some contender teams look to be on the rise with some winning streaks. Liberty doing the thing, the Sun doing the thing, the Mystics back to doing the thing, the Aces continue to do the thing. Some fun at the top. We'll talk about them at a later date. But we start with some big news. There's a three-team trade that wasn't, and then a two-team trade that was, that turned into a three-team. It's a lot was happening with Boston and Washington, and it was the Clippers, and then it turned into the Grizzlies, and there's a whole thing. But anyway, Kristaps Porzingis, you are a Boston Celtic. Tyus Jones, Danilo Gallinari, Mike Muscala, you are Washington Wizards for now, at the very least. Some rumblings that Washington's still looking to move some point guards, and we will get to one of the point guard moves a little bit later, but neither here nor there. Marcus Smart, you are now a Memphis Grizzly after always being a Boston Celtic, and we thought Malcolm Brogdon was going to be a Clifford, but he's no longer, and then that turns into what this is. And Marcus Smart, Memphis Grizzly. It fits, but also, I just didn't envision a time that Marcus Smart would not be a Boston Celtic. They have not missed the playoffs since he got drafted. Just very much the heart and soul of that team. Playmaking growth that we've seen from him. We know what kind of defender he became. That was just, that threw me off when that was announced. But anyway, just zooming out, what were your initial thoughts of the trade?
My initial thoughts were, this is wild. Because, again, it started out as, hey, this three-team trade might happen. And then, hey, this three-team trade is happening. And then, hey, guys, it's not happening. But Washington and Boston still having conversations. And it's like, well,
okay,
I'm intrigued by Porzingis to Boston. And I'm like, oh, I'm very intrigued by Porzingis to Boston. And obviously they covet him because they let go of Marcus Smart. And it's wild and it's funny to, like, think about this trade because I felt one way when it was Malcolm Brogdon. Mm-hmm. And even though a lot of the base is similar, it feels a little different when it's Marcus Smart. So I'm excited to talk through that. I'd like Kristaps Porzingis' fit in Boston. I think his skill set is one that we've seen bigs have success with in Boston. The ability to run pick and roll, to pick and pop, to space the floor, to mix in those post-ups, to be a hub, if need be, with Boston's movement. And they can use him off screens like they've used Al Horford at times. I think that Washington Wizard run was so important for Porzingis to reestablish what he can do on both ends of the floor. Like, I don't want to call it a refresh run, but hey, I could still protect the rim. I could still score. The Dallas run didn't define me. And then I think about Boston. And if you look at the end of that Boston season, they had Al Horford, Robert Williams, Blake Griffin, Luke Kornet, and Mike Muscala. So clearly the big man room was a question mark point of emphasis for them. And how many of the last three played impactful playoff minutes?
Yeah, I can't say I could put them down on the list there.
And that's the thing there. So, like, if you like pieces of what each of those three brought to Boston, then you should be able to see the vision and ceiling with Porzingis. I think Boston wanted to take the big man room off the board to a degree. Mm-hmm. And just let's remove that question mark. I also think it's kind of a weird insurance for everyone involved. Like, hey, we obviously at some point need to find a way to lessen the load for Al Horford and lower those minutes. This helps with that. Hey, in case Rob is hurt again, or in case Kristaps Porzingis is banged up, we are still okay. And in case, hey, Porzingis isn't hitting the same, or defenses are switching, or he's having a tough time defensively, we still have these two. So we don't necessarily have to lean everything into Porzingis. I think that's really important. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you like the Al Horford Robert Williams pairing, you have multiple double big lineups you can go to. So I guess that's a luxury. But I like that so much more when Marcus Smart wasn't the one that was traded.
Yeah.
And that's where the math changes for me, because if you have multiple double big lineups on top of all the small lineups you can throw out there, I think you figure out a lot of things you can throw at teams, especially come playoff time. But Marcus Smart was the anchor of those small lineups because of how many different people he could guard and defend. So I'm interested about that.
I got you. It's just, again, just from a culture standpoint, like Marcus Smart no longer being a Boston Celtic is just something that I have to get used to. I can't imagine how Celtic fans feel. Like, regardless of, like, is Kristaps a better basketball player than Marcus Smart? Like, I think we'll both agree, like, that's the case. You already laid out a lot of what I was going to say in terms of the impact that Kristaps can have. So, like, just from a pure basketball perspective, the talent upgrade does make sense, especially in light of, like, the big man questions that they may have that you already laid out. But Marcus Smart has been Boston. Like, Jason Tatum has become the superstar. Jaylen Brown has become a star in his own right. They've had multiple deep playoff runs, etc. But Marcus Smart just kind of embodies that. He set the table, in a literal sense, getting more point guard reps, but he also just set a tone defensively. It goes beyond like what he actually does defensively, which elite screen navigation, great one-on-one defense, the ability to slide up and down the positional spectrum, him calling out what the coverages are. You know, Boston has been, you know, through multiple coaches at this point, have been, in my opinion, the best scram switching team in basketball. Marcus Smart has been at the heart of all of that. Just his work as a communicator. And that's odd to come from the guard spot. You normally think of the big man calling things out. It's wild, the responsibility that Marcus Smart had defensively that culminates in the Defensive Player of the Year award. But just his energy. Even if he's shooting 33% from three over a stretch, that one three he makes is going to come with 1:30 left in the fourth quarter. Or Boston was down 14 for the majority of the game. Here comes that 9-0 run. You know who's hitting the shot that goes from 6-0 run to 9-0 run? It's Marcus Smart. Like, it just he just had a knack of doing that kind of thing. And so it's going to be weird to see that happen in Memphis, which, again, if he's not in Boston, Memphis is just a team that feels right for him. So it won't be as big of a shift as it could be for me, like just watching and recalibrating. But that's just going to be something to get used to. On the Kristaps front, though. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to co-sign and say he was just so important for this team. You laid out the defensive impact. I would also add his growth offensively really helped them go to a different level, not just with his ability to take and make shots and not be a liability on that end. Also, the pick and roll reps you mentioned. If he's initiating the offense, that is now a kick out to a Jason Tatum, to a Jaylen Brown. He can start things off for Boston to get teams in rotation. They're going to miss that. I do wonder, before we get back to KP, if it's just a Derek White endorsement. Like, hey, Derek White, you were doing a lot of things very well. Let's clear up your runway a little bit. Like, it felt like, I don't know which guard it was going to be, but they were like, we're not doing this again. Like, I just assumed it was going to be Pritchard, but then they actually traded Brogdon until they couldn't.
Yeah.
And then it ended up with Marcus Smart. So clearly it's like, okay, we can do this, but we just need to make sure one of y'all are not here anymore. You're all good, and this is causing issues.
Peyton Pritchard surviving all this is just funny because that just felt like the natural, well, he ain't playing like that, but when we've given him minutes, he's done good stuff. And I know he wants more minutes. He's going to be heading into restricted free agency soon. Let's see if we can cash in. Like, that's why the rumblings before the draft's like, hey, I can't remember which reporter it was like Boston trying to package Pritchard in 35 to either move up or just get something else in the room. And so that it was Brogdon makes sense because of the health stuff. And ultimately, you think back to the Brogdon trade. How many, like, serious rotation pieces did they give up in the Brogdon trade? They really didn't. And so now turning Brogdon, in light of who their guard slash initiation room is, like, okay, he was already the luxury piece that we added. Let's use this luxury piece to now get another upgrade. And so to now go to Marcus Smart, I agree with you. It does feel like a Derek White endorsement. I do also have questions about that. You know how I feel about Derek White. I know he's very good. But I do think there are enough subtle differences between Derek White and Marcus Smart, just in terms of the physicality, the strength. Like, Derek White can slide up and down. He feels more like a slide 1-3, as opposed to, we talked about it throughout the Philadelphia series. Yeah, we'll just have Marcus Smart front Joel Embiid and see what happens. So, like, it's not going to be the same level of switchability, even if I feel like I do think Derek White was a better perimeter defender than Marcus Smart was last year. And that screen navigation is still going to hit. But like the switchability, the, again, calling things out, not that Derek White can't do it. It is going to be a little bit different. And so I do wonder what that's going to look like. And even offensively, I think Derek White is a better decision maker. I think Derek White's a better offensive player. I do wonder, because he has the thing, like with Marcus Smart, it's like, hey, you don't have to take that shot, but you already knew he was never going to be scared to take one. There are still enough pockets of Derek White's being a little tentative sometimes where it's like, what does that do? And do we see enough growth from Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and now Kristaps? Is that enough to offset some of that stuff with Derek White offensively? Those are the kind of things that I'm keeping an eye on moving forward.
Quickly, I'll ask, do you think Smart being gone helps make it easier for those Boston guards that are staying to know, okay, it's us. We know we have this time. We know we got to make these plays. Does that take some of it away, or is this just something they need to overcome?
I think there's room for that for sure. Like, I would lean yes. I think it makes it easier just to, this is our role. This is the portion that I have. This is the level of aggression that I need to have. It is not like we haven't seen Derek White be like a 17, 18 point per game guy before in San Antonio. So, like, he can ramp it up. And I guess if you are clearing the way for Marcus Smart, I would assume this means Derek White just continues to start at this point. He has an entire offense to kind of recalibrate the thinking. Like, okay, I need to ramp this back up now. He can scale up. I think the shooting's going to become more important now. Because with Marcus Smart, you may treat them the same way. Like, if Derek White hits threes, you tip our cap. If Marcus Smart hits threes, you tip our cap. As a defense, you knew, oh, shoot, that's Marcus Smart in the corner. He's going to take the shot. There are some pockets where we don't know if Derek White's going to do that. He's going to have to completely eliminate those. I think he can. But that's why I'm just kind of the mind, okay, this is something that I'm keeping an eye on through the first 10 games of the season. And then if he checks that box, I'm like, okay, I'm not surprised. But I need to see that box checked, if that makes sense. To the Kristaps point, though, I am really fascinated by this fit. And I think off-rip, Kristaps can diversify the shot profile for Boston. As they were very much a three and rim team last year. And some of the intermediate stuff is like, okay, what are we getting exactly? Is Jason Tatum getting the floater to go? Are these mid-post shots going? Okay, Jaylen Brown is knocking these down, but do we want this within the flow of the offense, or is it coming a little bit slower than we like? We'll use our bigs as hubs, but those are more so above the break. I think Kristaps unlocks the mid-range area in a way that they just didn't have last year, which brings me to the Kristaps post-ups, which we've talked about throughout the history of this podcast. Kristaps on the block is cool if he's punishing smaller guys. If he's just taking turnarounds, he has to hit an ungodly amount of those to warrant extra attention being sent and open things up from that regard. Last year in Washington felt like the year where that finally started to happen. And it's funny, like we were talking about it before the pod, and I said, the Kristaps post-up certainly felt like good offense last year. But like this morning was the first time I actually looked up what those numbers were with Kristaps posting up people on possessions featuring a Kristaps Porzingis post up last season. 1.24 points per possession on those trips. An insanely efficient number for Kristaps Porzingis. And when just filtering for Kristaps posting up non-centers, so point guard, shooting guard, small forwards, power forwards, or whoever's in the lineup designated as those positions, that goes up to 1.27 points per possession. In each of the last two seasons, with Kristaps posting up a non-center, so you get in the switches, he's posting up smaller guys, 1.02 points per possession in each of the last two seasons. That is massive growth. And if Kristaps can now add that element in the middle of the floor, in addition to, you mentioned the hub, not enough, I don't think enough was said about how good Kristaps was last year, period. But not enough has been said about the passing growth that he showcased in Washington. You can run some stuff through him and let him pick out cutters or flow into handoffs and stuff like that. I think just unlocking the middle of the floor is going to work, could work wonders for Boston. In addition to whatever growth we see from Jason Tatum over the offseason, whatever growth we see from Jaylen Brown in the offseason. And then once you factor that into Kristaps and Al Horford, that's a lot of spacing offensively. And now if you want to switch with Al Horford, you got this big 7'3 dude behind him, if necessary. You want to play Kristaps and Rob together? You put Rob at the four defensively. he's going to be on a non-spacing wing anyway. And it's just a whole bunch of size. And then Kristaps can space on the other end. That opens up some pick and rolls, some diving for Robert Williams, or if you want to put him in the dunker spot. They can just have so much fun with this. Mm-hmm. This is an exciting move for Boston. It stinks losing Marcus Smart as opposed to Malcolm Brogdon in this deal. But Kristaps is really good. And the fact that this is an opt-in trade, I would imagine that means we want to secure this dude long-term. That'd just be my thinking. But if it does go haywire, if this is a Kristaps plays 47 games, or Kristaps only shot 34% from three this year, or the post numbers that I cited, it goes from 1.27 back down to like 1.03, which is fine, but not elite. Oh, okay. We let it rock, or it turns into sign and trade in the offseason, if we can make that work. It's still a really good gamble for Boston. And I like the move for them. And I think if it really hits, they're terrifying on both ends of the floor. I have a question, but I'll let you go. It looked like you were about to jump in.
Oh, no. It's just I've been balancing how good this can be with some of the question marks that it could bring up. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because you talked about the post-ups. I did not know the numbers were that. But my mind actually goes back to when the Wizards play Boston. And you saw the growth of Porzingis, where in Dallas it was, hey, we're just going to switch you. You go stand in the corner. That's cool. And he did a better job in Washington of hitting first, trying to work to hold his seal. If he didn't get great position, I'm going to try and reseal. I'm going to work to get the ball. That's against wings. That's against guards. It's against the Marcus Smarts, Tatums, and Browns. So that's going to be fun to see how they tap that button. Now, what's the usage going to be like? How are they going to use them are important. Do we get the same aggressive Kristaps in this system? Because while you don't necessarily need him to score every single point, you do need him to be effective. Mm-hmm. So is he going to have to scale back? Is Boston going to have to scale to him? Those are the things where I'm intrigued to see what does it do? Like, yeah, you still have Tatum and Brown, so you can afford some of the KP games, but like, are the roles going to be there? Is he going to become an automatic switch? Is the post up or the elbow touch now going to be the only way that he gets the ball? Mm-hmm. Is he coming off screens? Is he giving dribble handoffs? Is he a part of the movement? Can he hold up at the five defensively? Like, I think drop is fine. I think he showed an ability to contest to protect the rim. Mm-hmm. But what about the other coverages? But how much does playing with Al or Boston scram switching help him? Like, there's question marks there. So I was intrigued to get your thoughts on maybe the flip side of it.
I got you. And that kind of blends into the question I wanted to ask you. As you put Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Kristaps together, my playoff question is, and it's also tied into like Kristaps doing a better job against smaller players, et cetera. Is the Tatum Kristaps pick and roll going to be a switch? Is the Jaylen Brown Kristaps pick and roll going to be a switch in a playoff set? Because if it is, if Kristaps is still good enough, then that's just your answer. And you check that off the box. But it is intriguing that they add a talent in Kristaps, but it isn't the type of big, theoretically, that solves the switch issue. Because we still have the what does Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown in action together look, and that's likely a switch. You add Kristaps, but he has been a big low throughout his career. Like, okay, we can switch. We'll deal with it. He ain't going to knock down enough turnarounds. Again, last year he did. And you already highlighted how he did better, establishing better position and stuff last year, too. So steps have been taken. But through it, historically, Kristaps has been a guy you can switch against in high leverage moments. And so I do have in the back of my mind, what if Kristaps is better, but he still doesn't solve the problem? And I liken it to obviously very different players, cross league comparison. But I liken it to like my thought with Washington adding Brittany Sykes, where it's like she's very clearly a good player. He's absolutely going to help them. Does it solve the fundamental question about this team offensively? And so I think Kristaps is kind of in that bucket where if he's still a switch and he isn't able to nail it, they're still good enough to overcome it, but it doesn't make it as much of a home. It turns into a triple instead of a home run, if that makes sense.
So are you calling Kristaps to Boston, Tina Charles to the Storm?
Ooh. Ooh.
Heat rocks on a Friday, baby. Let's go.
Oh, no. I don't know what to do with that one. I am not going to hold you. Yeah. Why'd you do that to me? That's crazy.
That's KYP. You gotta know your personnel, folks.
That's wild. I would say, on a related note, I was just doing the research on Second Spectrum. Just looking at the Bradley Beal, Kristaps pick and roll pairing from last year. 1.11 points per possession on those, which is really good. But also, opponents switched a little over 27% of those last year. So that's a lower number. I would assume that that goes up in Boston, especially with Tatum initiating. Like, he's just bigger than Bradley Beal is. But it's interesting with Beal being, 6'3 on a good day, that they still switched a quarter of those against Kristaps. And this is with Kristaps becoming increasingly effective against those switches. So it even brings more to the question, all right, Jaylen Brown's bigger than Beal. Jason Tatum definitely bigger than both. That could still be a switch. So again, just something to keep an eye on. Not necessarily raining on the parade. Just something to keep note of moving forward.
Do you have any concerns with the closing lineup for Boston?
Concerns, no. Because I think they have a bunch of options, and that's ultimately what you want. I do wonder, I guess just from the human element, because I do not think this is a situation where Kristaps closes 100% of the time. I do think there are going to be certain matchups where it makes more sense to close Horford plus the four small. Or small adjacent, I guess. Like, Jason Tatum ain't small. You get what I'm saying? I think there are going to be matchups where that makes sense. There are going to be matchups where what Robert Williams is doing on the offensive glass alongside Al Horford is going to be more valuable than Kristaps spacing. And so it's more so, how does that look in the locker room with Kristaps? But as far as like the actual optionality of it, I don't super worry. Like, I think it's good that we can close with Kristaps at the five and surround him with Tatum at the four, and et cetera, et cetera. We can go Kristaps and Horford. We can go Kristaps and Rob. We can go Rob and Horford. We can go Horford as the lone big. We can go Rob as the lone big. That is an exciting, book of box of options that you have if you're Joe Mazzulla with an entirely new staff. He has a full staff around him, so that should also be fun. Like, we should see coaching growth from Joe Mazzulla as well. Exciting times for Boston. I know they're still going to have to grieve Marcus Smart their own way. That first game, the first road game with Memphis heading to Boston and Marcus Smart being there. I personally want to watch whatever that that video is going to be, the tribute video is going to be. I know that's going to be good stuff. But
you're not wrong.
Yeah, I think that's going to be.
You hit on it. Since we're on Marcus Smart, I still cannot think of a better place for Marcus Smart to end up than Memphis. And I add him to my ever-expanding list of people who go to the Grizzlies that I wish were on a different Grizzlies team. But to be able to go to the Grindhouse, former palace of the Grindfather, and now just show up like, hey, I'm also here. That's kind of tough.
The lineage is fire.
Yeah. It's one of those that makes a ton of sense. You love to see it. Like, if you're going to lose Dylan Brooks, and you're going to lose Tyus Jones, and Ja's not going to be around for...
We'll see.
Who knows how long. Marcus Smart's a good gap filler, and B, I think he really helps them in the playoffs. Like, hey, Ja might not be here, but that team is going to have to compete because Marcus Smart's not going to have it any other way. Memphis having a defense that features the last two defensive player of the years is kind of fun.
Dog, Marcus Smart and Jared Jackson Jr. on the same defense. Oh, yeah,
that's kind of going to be nuts. I need all of the Marcus Smart, Steven Adams interactions. I need them to form a tag team. but having Marcus Smart who can defend multiple positions, he can play point guard, he can initiate sets, not afraid of taking shots. So while the percentages aren't as great, it never feels like you can put him back in that liability zone where, hey, we're just going to leave you open. Like you can try it, but it's not the same as what the Lakers did to Dylan Brooks there. I thought it was surprising how much Memphis wanted to upgrade their wing room. It feels like they couldn't get the guy they wanted. And I think the biggest key to that, they wanted to do something and really value Marcus Smart, was they gave up picks for it. That's why I was like, oh. Y'all really want to do this.
Which, with the context of those picks, like, I think it's a fair gamble. Like, they gave up a first, but they moved back 10 spots in the draft. Mm-hmm. So, like, it isn't a huge thing in this year's draft. And then the 24 first is from Golden State, which we're going to talk about them shortly. But I would imagine that's not going to be, like, a top 10 pick. So, like, it's fine.
Also, very sneakily, how much room do they have on their roster? They're close to logjam with young people time. Like, they need to figure out a couple of them.
Yeah, they need to bounce back from Zaire Williams for sure. Guess we'll see more Laravia. We'll see more Roddy. They can't just stand pat with their young guys and just expect some leaps. And you know, with Ja not there, like this, maybe you have a little less pressure. Just okay, first 25 with an asterisk games. Okay, let's see what these young dudes have. And then as we bring Ja back into the fold, we see where we are record-wise. If they're 15 and 10, cool. If they're 11 and 14, not so cool. But play in, we have plenty of time to work our way back up. And also, all right, let's see if we can package some stuff together. We see what the wing room looks like right now. Not up to snuff. Let's see if we can package something and get something going. So, like, it's an interesting spot to be in for Memphis.
No, and I think they've always wanted to be next man up. And luckily, some of these guys got some experience last year. So it'll be interesting to see who makes the leap and who doesn't. I also wonder how much of this is also just a little bit of, hey, Luke Kennard, come on down.
Yeah.
And just to see exactly how far they can take that. You'll have a nice runway there mm-hmm. for him to really establish himself. So I'm curious there. I can't stop thinking about the defense. I can't stop thinking about what it does for Memphis in the playoffs. Like, again, if you're telling me Ja, Marcus Smart, Desmond Bain, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Steven Adams, that seems like a fun group in the playoffs.
It is. And if you want to close a little bit smaller, Brandon Clark back. Mm-hmm. Such a huge loss for Memphis last postseason. That was Steven Adams as well, because duh. Mm-hmm. But like, they really missed that versatility that Brandon Clark provided at the four. That's a fun, switchable group in the games, man. And like you said Luke Kennard, that just pressed the button in my mind. It was like, huh, so they're going to be starting. I would assume they start Smart, Kennard, Bane, Jaren, and Steven Adams. Like, that's mm-hmm. not bad. Mm-mm. That's not bad at all. And especially if you feel like the offensive growth that we saw from Jaren Jackson as a driving post-up guy, if that's real, Desmond Bane proved to you that he can get you 20 a night. It's going to be an even spacier offense start. Like, hey, man. And I guess just very quietly in the games that Jaws missed over the last few seasons, like Memphis has had an elite defense in those minutes that he hadn't been available. So like they have a foundation to where, again, it wouldn't surprise me at all if they're 15 and 10 through the first 25 or something like that. Not world beating, but
it's also a sneaky double down on, hey, we need our defense to make this work. So let's make sure we get that right. And then we'll figure the rest out. So it'll be interesting to see what next moves they have. Tyus Jones to Washington. Did that do anything for you?
I don't know yet. And really? I say I don't know yet because they just have so many guards that they can move around. I just don't know who's sticking yet. Tyus Jones in a vacuum, yes, because Tyus Jones is very good. And like it's very easy and important, honestly, to cite like the assist to turnover ratio. He's been elite since he's been in the league. He takes care of the ball. He makes good decisions. The growth in general aggression from him has been huge over the last few years. The growth of the pull-up jumper has been huge for him. Him becoming a more reliable three-point shooter is huge for him. And so if you are giving him more of a runway in Washington, like, I like that. And this is going to be a roster that trends a little younger in light of, you know, the next trade that we're talking about. It's nice to have someone like Tyus that can get you into some offense, even if he's not going to be your primary scoring option. He's going to help set the table. I think he's someone that you value in making sure the young guys that you want to get reps, let's make sure they're in great position to get these reps. And so, again, you zoom out, we'll see what happens with Monty Morris, who apparently tweeted out eye emojis last night. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's just because of who Washington drafted or if something's coming down the pipeline soon with him. We'll see what happens there. We'll see what happens with DeLon Wright. But, like, I like Tyus. I think he's very good. I think he absolutely is a starting caliber point guard that's been coming off the bench for Memphis, as opposed to a really good backup point guard. So it's exciting to see him get that runway.
he's going to get that opportunity, and it's interesting. It is a bigger leap than people anticipate. It's not necessarily purely just a talent standpoint. You just have more responsibility, more time on the court. So he's had the experience. I want to see if he grows. It feels like Washington is always somewhat settled in their search for a point guard for this type of move. So that's where I'm like, I want to see where this goes, because they did have Monte Morris and DeLon Wright last year for similar purposes. But I think there's more of an upside probably with Tyus. You know he's going to be solid. And then again, more of Washington adding players that A, can help them now, and B, could help them later. So I'm intrigued to see what that
looks like. I like it. Also, we finally just get to see Gallo, which I'm excited about. I want to see what that return is going to look like.
Can I ask an unfair question?
Oh, boy. Sure, what we got?
Who felt worse, Danilo or Mike Muscala? Danilo was there all year, did all this rehab, said, yo, I'm good, I'm back, let's go. Hey, man.
It's probably Gallo for me. Because, like, Mike Muscala, at least he got the run in Boston. It's like he was in OKC, and him and Shea were plus-minus monsters. The Thunder were a winning basketball team, and those two played together. And once you threw Kenrich Williams in the fold, they were very much a win. Anyway, he goes from that to very obvious contender. And, like, that was the very early game in the stretch where he hit 4 threes. I was like, ah, well, this is why they added Mike Muscala. Cool. And he just was not in rotation as the playoffs hit. It's like, well, that's neat. And so back to Washington, at least, I guess just a return to let me help my stock, to the help my stock zone, I guess, with Mike Muscala. And so we'll see how long he's there. Still, like, in the short term, a valuable pick and pop threat to have with Tyus or whichever guard you're giving reps to. But, like, I like that for them. We'll see if he's long for Washington. The Gallo thing does kind of stink. Because, like, he was a solid addition to that Boston team heading in and then got hurt before he could even play. And, like, there were some rumblings, hey, you might be able to make it back late in the playoff run. Did not ultimately do that. And now he's in Washington.
Is this a safe space?
Yeah, go ahead.
Probably not, but I'm going to ask this question anyways.
Okay.
Did Boston be like, hey, we're just going to ask Danilo to do this stuff anyways. Can we just go get Porzingis?
Well, why have 6'10 Porzingis when we could have 7'3 Porzingis? It's a wild concept. hey, man, that's not something I considered, but maybe. I guess we shall see. But no, I'm excited to see healthy Gallo. If he's able to stay healthy, he's going to be another question, but excited to see. The shooting is valuable. Like, he's long been one of the, like, high free throw rate guys. Isolation is he will just put you in the penalty. And so I like this as a rehab stopper. Hey, don't forget about me stop. And, like, maybe he's moved by the deadline. So I'm excited to see what that looks like. While we're on Washington, we can now flip to the other big trade that happened pre-draft, in which the Washington Wizards acquired Jordan Poole, Patrick Baldwin Jr., though we learned about that part later, Ryan Rollins, who just didn't get a shot in Golden State, fine, a 2030 first-round pick is top 20 protected. I'm not aware at this time of any protections beyond that, if it goes to top 10 in 2031 or turns to a set. I don't know that yet. I'll update that when I get that info. And a 2027 second pick. And the Golden State Warriors got Chris Paul. To which I say, outside of a Jordan Poole, James Harden signing trade, you could not imagine a funnier trade partner. You simply could not draw this up if you follow the fan bases at all. The one, I just got a good cackle out of Chris Paul, Golden State Warriors. And especially after, I think it was Chris Haynes that tweeted out that, you know, Golden State very much plans to keep him. I was like, oh, so they just gotta deal with Chris Paul for a year, huh? That's interesting. Go ahead.
I was stunned. This one had me stunned. There was not a world that I had Chris Paul, you're a Golden State Warrior. Mm-hmm. Not a bingo card in the world that I had that on. And I was literally to the point of just waiting. Okay, there's going to be a follow-up tweet here. Yeah, he's on the move somewhere else. Or are they going to buy him out? All right, yeah, I see what's going on here. didn't happen. And I was like, well, guess this is a thing, huh? Mm-hmm. Which side did you want to talk about first? Because the Warriors side, let's talk Washington first.
Let's talk Washington.
Because the Warriors side, I can go about 19 different directions because it is just a hilarious concept. Washington was able to turn Chris Paul, who could have just been bought out, into Jordan Poole. And like, I know the opinions are very loud on Jordan Poole. The timing is not great coming off that playoff series for him optics wise. But again, this is a very young player who has shown that he can produce at a certain level, mm-hmm. and now gets a fresh start in a new place where he's going to have opportunity to play a lot, shoot a lot, have his own team, quote unquote, maybe go with the no one believed in me type beat. Mm-hmm. So it'll be fun to see if he grows. And then the thing for me, if I'm Washington, all right, this is a young talent, makes us better right now. We at least have a vision. If this hits, we're in really good shape. If it doesn't, he's just Jordan Poole, who's still a very good basketball player. We can just trade Jordan Poole later.
Yeah.
So that's the part where I'm like, see what you're doing.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, the extension is just now kicking in for him. But if they decide to trade him next year or the year after, even if he hasn't hit the way you want him to, it's easier to talk to a team and say, hey, there's only a year or a year and a half left on this deal if you want to take this kind of flyer because of how young he is. So, like, I think it's something that's going to be movable for Washington. And ultimately, I do like Jordan Poole getting to spread his wings a little bit because, like, even as he contributed to the title team, it very much felt like here's the core and Jordan versus Jordan being part of the core, if that makes sense. Like, he was part of the core because of age and importance, but, like, it never... He always kind of felt like the transition point, in a way. And then once you add in everything that happened before last season, all of that, it felt clear that Golden State wanted a reset of some sort. And so it's nice to see Jordan now. He already has his ring. He's already contributed to winning before. And now he has like a lower stakes environment let me actually get my game off in front of the section. Let me get my game off and really spread my wings here and see where it takes him. Because like the foundation of pull-up shooting, the handle, and the rim pressure that he provides, that's pretty darn important. And he just has that in spades already. And so I'm excited to see like what step he takes next with this group. I think that's going to be a lot of fun for Washington. And again, like you rope that into like the Tyus discussion. You know, you don't want Jordan Poole running 60 pick and rolls a game. You don't want him to run your offense. You want him to be your top scoring option, but you don't want him to run things. It's helpful to have Tyus in tow to where, hey, this play may end with Jordan getting something, but I will direct things and make sure this is the right matchup for you to attack. Make sure our game flow is right. Make sure our tempo is right, etc. So, like, I just like the concept of that backcourt. And I'm excited to see what it looks like in Washington. To the Warriors side, though, Chris Paul is such an interesting addition to this basketball team.
What was your first gut reaction when Chris Paul was a Golden State Warrior?
You know what? I can tell you right now. I'm going to go to my my Twitter page. I'm going to make sure I quote myself correctly. I'm gonna make sure I got this right with old Christopher Paul. Chris Paul, 2023-24 Sixth Man of the Year Award winner, send tweet. Not the first reaction, but it was one of the primary ones that I had. But in all seriousness.
Before we get to all seriousness, how much shame did you have in that moment?
How much shame? What was there to have shame about?
Okay, that answers everything. Continue, let's get serious.
That's a wild question. But no, like one, the concept of Chris Paul and Draymond Green on the same team, just the collective basketball IQ between those two is going to be phenomenal. Also, Chris Paul is absolutely going to be on that man's podcast soon, and I will be seated. But anyway, did you hear the Dre Steve Curry episode? Like, that was a good basketball talk. Dre and Steve P3 going to get after me. Anyway, that's just going to be, that's a fun mix. in terms of the basketball IQ there. It's also a fun mix for us to watch in terms of just the competitive nature of those two. There will be antics between those two. Boy, will there be antics. But like that's just those are two really smart, super competitive basketball players. And I think to the competitive and serious portion of that, I think Golden State wanted some of that. I think in light of some of the stuff that happened last year, I think they wanted a bit of a reset. I think they wanted a level of seriousness and a level of know-how. And Chris Paul has that in spades. It feels like a good fit in that regard. It don't on the court. Like Chris Paul can still run one heck of a ball screen for you. He can still direct your offense. If you are, you know, depending on how, I wonder how many minutes him and Steph are going to play together. Like, again, my guess is that Chris Paul comes out there. In terms of the age, the health stuff, just bringing him along slower so you can have him for the postseason run. Like, I would, my guess is he's going to be a 26, 27 minute per game guy off the bench. I wonder how often him and Steph play together. If they do play together, like, it doesn't have to just be Draymond directing traffic as a hub. Chris Paul can just run stuff. And can get the Steph off ball in ways that I don't think he's had available to him throughout his career. That's going to be fun to me. We have an entire offseason to watch, so we will see who Golden State adds a free agency. Add a singular talent over 6'9 that can jump high. Chris Paul will run pick and rolls for your second. The Jordan Poole with Steph Curry on the bench minutes last season, Golden State was a -5 net rating in those. Chris Paul with Devin Booker off the floor, they were like a +1, and it was much higher the year before last. Just having that with Steph Curry off the floor is going to do wonders for Golden State. I'm not asking their fans to love him. They likely will not. I'm not going to waste my time. But I think you can feel better about your team winning minutes with Steph Curry on the bench with Chris Paul in tow. And that's before getting into the specifics of who are you staggering with Chris? Is it going to be Chris and Dre? Is it going to be Chris plus regular roller plus Jonathan Kuminga plus Klay Thompson and Wick? Like, you can insulate him defensively in different ways depending on what the rest of the roster looks like. I think Chris Paul being able to direct traffic is going to be very important for this team. Also, the pull-up shooting is still good. Like, the spot-up shooting is good. Slow start to the year last year, but it perked up towards the end of last year. He's still a very good basketball player. I think this is solid work for Golden State.
Well, let's talk about it. Okay. Not surprised by your thoughts. And I think it's interesting. I think a lot of the initial thought is, well, the Warriors were small and they got smaller. Or the Warriors were old and they got older. Or the Warriors were slow and they got slower. Or, hey, the Warriors play with this pace and Chris Paul plays with this pace. So this can't work. I understand.
Valid question.
But that's no fun. I think there's a world where this hungry Warriors team that fell short, trying to get back to the top, heading towards the last rodeo at some point, combined with, let's just call it, Chris Paul's competitive nature, could take this team to a different place. I can't think of too many teams that are going to want to win more than that team. In particular.
Yeah.
Chris Paul times Warriors fans is hilarious just as a concept.
It is.
Like, I want to see all of y'all's reaction to the first time that Chris Paul sees a team is in the bonus, hits the swipe through in the Chase Center. What y'all going to do? Y'all going to get a standing ovation? What y'all going to do, huh?
They better clap. Because I look, the Warriors are not a team that gets to the rim. Chris Paul does not help in that regard. Chris Paul, the Warriors were not a team that got to the free throw line. Chris Paul can help you in that regard. If not for himself, his ability to draw non-shooting fouls and to get the opposing team in the bonus. The Warriors were 23rd in non-shooting fouls drawn last year per PvP stats. The Phoenix Suns were first. The Warriors were last in technical free throws taken. They were last in free throws taken. But on the technical front, the Suns were eighth. Chris Paul will point out when someone's doing something wrong on the court, on the bench, in the third row, etc. The Warriors will take more free throws with Chris Paul on the roster. And I think that is helpful. You can roll your eyes at a Chris Paul rip through to get the fourth team foul on the team. if that means when Steph Curry gets grabbed off the ball, it's the fifth, and now he's taking two free throws. I think Golden State Warrior fans will be okay with that. Just prepare yourself. But continue. I'm sorry.
No, they're going to find a way. And again, I think, I don't know, like, I am no CBA expert, but this appears to be a money move in a sense where, hey, let's take a look at this. Ooh, that's what we got to do. Well, Chris Paul going to make some money. Is this short term, though? Let's go ahead and do that. And I also think just a vibe reset. I don't think both of those guys could have stayed in Golden State. And I, my mind's trying to figure out, okay, how does this work? What does this look like? Number one, a Steph Curry, Chris Paul, Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond lineup, if Draymond returns, is going to be hell in a cell for all NBA referees. Just want to say that now. That's going to be hilarious.
Boy, is it.
But if there's one way to conserve energy, if you're Chris Paul, hey, he has the ball at the top while there's a bunch of movement going on. That's not the end of the world. Your second unit point was huge. And maybe that's half the value. Is, hey, Chris Paul is here to ensure that doesn't happen again. Because if Steph's on the floor, he's on the floor. And we're going to get something. The playbook dynamic intrigues me. Does he bring more pick and roll to the table for Golden State, for their second unit? How do they mash this up to where they can use some of what he brings to make sure they get something in the half court, combined with what they do movement-wise? And, like, here's the thing about Chris Paul. I understand the criticisms, but Chris Paul is a very, very, very smart basketball player. I tell this all the time. One of the first times I was out in the arena on a bench, I was in Memphis, we were playing the Clippers, Chris Paul called a play. It was the call for middle pick and roll. Yelled it out, looked at the bench, said it as loud as he could. It was really a fake for a pin down, just V reaction. And he looked and smiled. He's going to figure out how to open things up in this Golden State offense. You don't think Chris Paul is going to enjoy setting off-ball screens for Steph Curry? Are you not aware of this man's antic game?
But that's going to be another non-shooting fight. Oh, is this a stronger player trying to fight over the screen? Let me fall down real quick.
So that's going to be interesting. And, like, yeah, he's going to be annoying. Like, he's calculated. Some things may slow down. That might be better for the Warriors in the half court at times. He's going to set some screens. Like, what about his post-ups? One of your internet favorite people is going to talk about Chris Paul post-ups, bringing them back to life. And, oh, the Warriors are running post splits off Chris Paul post-ups. And the third option, Chris Paul catches, and now they go right into a low pick and roll. Look at how the Warriors are integrating Chris Paul. It's coming. It's coming in about 6 months, I guarantee you.
Chris Paul snub pick and roll for the win, gosh darn it. Yes.
Oh, look, Chris Paul is running double drags while it's a screen for Steph Curry. Oh, my gosh. The Warriors are so smart. It's coming. So there are positives here. And my mind goes to, it reminds me a little bit of the D'Angelo Russell move. Where, hey, we need to do something. We need someone. We can figure this out. Thanks for coming. May we keep it rolling. And if it doesn't work, hey, man, we had some fun. Your contract's expiring, right? Okay. High five. But there's too much basketball IQ and competitive nature for me to just say, hey, this is just not going to work. Like, imagine Steph Curry screening for Chris Paul. Or the ways they can manipulate switches and be like, okay, cool. You want to guard me? Do you want to guard him?
Oh, no. They switched this really good defender on to Chris Paul. He can't beat dudes off the dribble anymore. Ah, you put your third best defender on Chris Paul, didn't you? Guess who's guarding now? He's guarding Steph Curry. And now he's either going to have to run with Steph Curry or Steph Curry's going to get the boogie against your third best defender. Have fun with that.
Why is Chris Paul having so much success as the first screener as Steph Curry comes off?
Are they running veer action with Chris Paul as the handler? Now it's an off ball for Steph. Yeah, switch that if you want to.
So yeah, I think there's little wrinkles. I think there's little wrinkles.
I'm excited about this one. Oh man. Very briefly, Golden State was, you know, naturally a team that did not run a lot of pick and rolls. About 55 per 100 possessions last year. It's towards the bottom of the league. That was about 55.3 with Steph on the floor. With Steph off the floor, 56.2. So a slight bump. I would guess that the bump is going to be a little bit higher with Chris Paul in tow, with Steph Curry on the bench. I'll just guess that's how that goes. Also, like, got mentioned up top, like just give Chris Paul like a tall dude that can jump. What if it's just Chris Paul, Jonathan Kuminga pick and roll on the side like that? That could be fun. That could be fun. And like, it's not like they didn't sprinkle in some of those like ISOs or post-ups for Jonathan Kuminga last year. Again, put a small dude or a bad defender on Chris Paul because you don't think he can get to the rim. He can't get to the rim like that. But, you know, put that defender on Chris if you want. That can open up some mismatches elsewhere. And like the thing about Chris Paul, it's not like he's upset that he doesn't get the shot on a possession. And like, not trying to put that on Jordan Poole, but I would say it'd be more likely for, if Jordan Poole has five possessions in a row where he's just spaced, it's understandable he gets antsy. If that's Chris Paul, I don't think he cares. With him being the king of, oh, that play worked. We're going to run this seven more times in a row. And let's see if you do anything about it. Like, that's Chris Paul. And so if it is, okay, you're switching against me. I can't attack, but this mismatch is open now. We're just going to play out of that next five, six trips down the floor and see what you do differently. And then if you go back to base coverage, all right, cool. I'm just running you through a screen. Let me get to this right elbow real quick. That's a jumper. Oh, wait, here's Steph if all else fails. Like, it's just, I like it. And I like it, and me liking it doesn't mean that there are no downsides. I think the pace question is fair. I do think that as Chris Paul has gotten older, he has naturally shifted away from being the point of attack defender to, I'm going to put you on this wing so you can call out stuff and you get handsy at the nail if necessary, etc. He can absolutely be picked on defensively at this stage of his career. That's all fair. And in light of like what the small ball unit can be with Draymond at the five, if it's Chris, Steph, Clay, Andrew Wiggins, Dre, that is smaller. Like, quietly, like, I still feel like Chris Paul is a better defender than Jordan Poole, but Jordan Poole does have more size, has more athleticism. Those are all valid questions. I don't know how much Golden State leans into their small lineup to close. There will be times that they do it, and I think it can work, but the defensive questions are fair. And within a playoff context, like, we talked about it in the Denver series where, oh, yeah, we'll just give Chris Paul a drop, make enough shots for us to care. I think it's going to be worth keeping an eye on that moving forward. And I think it's going to be worth keeping an eye on what Chris Paul himself can do against switches, because that has trended more towards, I am taking sidestep threes over the top. He can knock those. He can knock those down. But those are all valid concerns to have. I'm not saying this is just a perfect move for Golden State. I do think it's a good one overall. I do think the positives outweigh the negative heading into this deal. If it turns out to be bad, I'll just take the L. Won't be the first time or the last time. But I like it. And then once you factor in the salary portion, that is the boring part. But we do have a new CBA. We do have that second apron. Golden State is absolutely going to be a team that is looking to shave off some salary where they can while still remaining good. They're going to try to thread that needle. I think every team is going to try to thread that needle to a certain degree. Yeah, Chris Paul having the 30 mil and then the rest of it is just non-guaranteed. Yeah, that's valuable. So if it doesn't work, or if it's just a B-minus move compared to an A-minus or an A, they can cut bait, no charge. So, like, all in all, I think Golden State did some good work. I'm excited to see how it works. The antics were going to be there. A lot of basketball IQ is going to be there. It's going to be some fun stuff, I feel. What else do we have? We did have a couple of draft night trades that we can get into. Actually, before we get into the draft night trades, did you have any draft thoughts? Any teams that popped for you? Like, hey, I like what they did here?
I do. But as per usual, I think I'm going to just defer to you.
Ah, I see.
What they say? Talent before age, something like that? I don't know. Go ahead.
Who said that? I'm
me! Also,
you are both older and more talented than me, so I don't even know if that works.
Oh, gosh.
But, all right, come on. You know, I appreciate you being humble. I will take it. I like what Portland did in the draft.
Excuse me?
I like Portland's draft quite a bit.
You were born in 2000? This is the first Blazer draft you ever liked, isn't it?
I don't like that. What did I do? Are you proud of that? Because you shouldn't be. But no,
yes, I am.
I repeat, you shouldn't be. But no, Scoot Henderson, absolute stud. I don't need to spend a bunch of time on why Scoot Henderson is a good pick. But you get Scoot Henderson. You get Chris Murray, who can fill gaps for you, who can shoot. Wing with size. The Blazers certainly need that. You take the swing on Ryan Rupert. I like that. I like that they're just taking the wing bets, period. They need those. They need to hit on them. I really enjoy what Portland does. Now, This is going to be my portion of this conversation. I'm going to leave it alone. We will see how much it matters in the short term in light of Wade's arms wildly. But in a vacuum, the draft itself, I like the picks that Portland made. Go ahead.
I was going to piggyback on your Blazers point. I think for me, I think this is the first time I talked about it on here, right? I think the math changed for Portland as soon as that pick became three. And then it changed even more once they realized, oh, we have a chance to go get Scoop. It was going to take a heck of an offer, in my opinion, for them to trade three. And I don't think it was out there. And so for them, it's like, all right, yes, we have this Dame thing. Yes, he wants a contender, but I don't know. We can't pass up on Scoop. And now if we do have to end up trading Dame, we know what our next vision is. Mm-hmm. We got Scoot, we got Shaden, and they continue to, like, you could tell, I feel like every move the last two seasons has been size and length. Portland wants that versatility. They want guys who can play multiple positions. They want to add shooting. They want to be able to mix their lineups. So I love the pieces they added around Scoot. It just fits what they're trying to get to. Now, mm-hmm. how you figure out which is which, good luck, because you got a lot of them. But eventually they're going to find their way. You still have Simons who you can either bring back. Again, he's very good. Or you can try and see if he can improve the roster. You can try and see if Nurk can improve the roster. See if Dame knocks on the door. But I like the vision. Portland, it was kind of a, I understand, but also.
Mm-hmm. I got you. Also, a quick hat tip to Utah, who had some fun in the first round. Taylor Hendricks early. You get Keyonte George at 16. I'm not going to have firm thoughts on Taylor Hendricks yet because I haven't watched enough, so I'm not going to speak out of my butt or anything like that. Keyonte George seems fun as a creator. You get Bryce Sensabaugh at 28. How on earth? Like, this feels like he's just going to be in, like, the Desmond Bane Academy for me. Like, this is a good basketball player. You should probably draft that guy, especially if you need shooting. I don't get how Bryce almost falls out of the first round. And I say this as someone who's not a draft nick. I obviously don't have intel. So, like, I don't know if he's got, like, some red flags in the medicals or anything like that. But, like, that just seems like the kind of shooter slash shot creator that a good team can slot onto their roster and feel good about. Like, okay, cool. We have a defensive infrastructure, or we have a ball handler that can unlock him some more. You just draft that guy. So I props to Utah for nailing him. As far as, like, brow-raising teams, I guess, like, I go Charlotte, and it's less negative. Like, again, I would have went Scoot Henderson over Brandon Miller, but, like, I absolutely understand the intrigue with Brandon Miller. Just to have that intersection of size and skill and shooting ability, I just kind of cackle at, like, the finishing. Like, that's not great. We'll see how much that improves. And, like, if your foundation is LaMelo, who has some half-court finishing questions, and also Brandon Miller, who has some half-court finishing questions, let's see. But I do think he's going to be a good player overall, so, like, no real qualms there. And if you pass up on Scoot and then you end up with Nick Smith at 27, I think was the pick, like, that's still a pretty good haul. Again, I would rather have Scoot, and we'll just see how that plays out. But they at least seem to do a good job. And then you add in the moves they made in the second round. Like, I think Charlotte did well for themselves. They could have did a little bit better, in my opinion, but I think they did well. And then Miami, I guess I get the hand-wringing, but I also don't get the hand-wringing. Like, he does seem firmly good. He seems, like, he seems ready to contribute, which I think is valuable to Miami if they're not trading that pick elsewhere, and we will see what the rest of their offseason looks like. But, like, he seems like the kind of, like, creator or mid-range creator that they like. Size, smart dude. Not going to get into all the hustle. He's a winner, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, he seems like a Miami pick in the truest essence of the word, as cliche as that may sound. And if the jumper hits for him, like, he seems like a really fun player that can slide across multiple positions and can fit into all kinds of lineups that Miami likes to run. So, like, if it's me, I'd probably look at Bryce Sensabaugh and be like, hey, this Heat team couldn't really shoot until they could shoot, and then they couldn't shoot anymore. And they need, like, some front court depth or, like, some 3-4 depth. Let's get Bryce and see what it looks like. But, like, I'm not mad at the pick. So we'll just see how that plays out, summer league, et cetera. I think that's to anyone else I want to shout. I think that will do it for me. Did you have anyone?
Quick shout out to the Oklahoma City Thunder. I really, really love that Cason Wallace fit. Just the way that he could impact the game on both ends of the floor. I like the effort he gives defensively. I want to see if that activity translates, kind of the same way I had with Jalen Williams last year. But just the type of player that he is, the ability to space and knock down threes, can be used in dribble handoffs, can initiate good cutter off-ball movement, has a pull-up, can drive. Really sounds like he fits right in with the Oklahoma City Thunder and what they want to do. And that's where it's like, hey, man, they have found a formula and are improving on it. So I like that. And then I wanted to give a tip of the cap to the Dallas Mavericks.
We like it. We like it.
Just an effort to try and reshape some things that went left last year going into free agency. The big man room did not get it done last year. You can point the finger however you want, but I feel like everyone took a step back. You add Lively, which is a big plus for you.
I think Derek Lively, man. He's been good.
Yeah, the athleticism is there. But then you're able to also add Rashawn Holmes, which I like because, A, his time in Sacramento was just over. He's still a quality NBA player. Mm-hmm. Now we'll see if he can nail the defense. But at the very least, you got screeners, you got rollers, you got bigs that are going to know their job. You still have a modicum of versatility if need be, but I like how they did that. And then it's not Dorian Finney-Smith, but getting Olivier I thought was a great pick. Mm-hmm. So again, hey, we need someone who can defend some of these people. Obviously going to be interested to see how much time these guys get, but at least the idea is there to add some youth to what you have.
Mm-hmm. And I would just add very quickly on the Dallas front. You mentioned the case of picking OKC, like trading Davis Bertans, getting a trade player exception, and then immediately using that on Rashawn Holmes was both funny, but also just good work. But let's add to the big man room, because have you seen our big man room? And also Christian Wood ain't coming back. And also, have you seen our big man room? And so, like, having Rashawn Holmes, the push shot is going to be back. That's going to be fun. The 8-10 foot king, we'll see. So that's going to be cool. And then Derek Lively, like, I just think he's going to be tremendous as a roller. And then also, if the shooting is real, a little bit of a handle is real. Like, if we just get back to, like, the pre-college tape and he's able to explore a little bit, I think they have a really fun player in the front court there, and I think Luka's going to enjoy him quite a bit. That is going to be some fun stuff. I would just also add on the draft trade front, Milwaukee sending a 2030 second-round pick in cash and getting Andre Jackson Jr. is a fun bet. And I say that not only as, like, a UConn guy, but also it's been a couple of years now, or a few years, really, that Milwaukee's taking these bets on rangy wings. Like, let's see if we can replenish the wing field for us. We're going to have to nail some of these, like, late first, second round picks, see if we can get a value contract in there somewhere as we try to build around Giannis without having a bunch of salary to throw around or a bunch of picks to throw around after, like, the Drew trade and stuff like that. So, like, I just like that conceptually, continue to make those bets on wings, and I just really like Andre. He's such a smart player. Guy that can pass, get busy in transition, can defend all over the place. Like, I just like that. We'll see how real the jumper is, because that is a relatively big question mark. I think that's fair to say. But that's a dude that knows how to play basketball. And I think he can work in Milwaukee. Any other closing draft thoughts?
I didn't think Indiana had to do that to Washington.
That was kind of rude. Oh, you want this guy, huh? We were just thinking about him.
Seems like you guys have had a really busy week, huh? Say, bud, looks like these picks are coming up. It'd be a real shame if we went ahead and took Bilal now, wouldn't it? Oh, thanks for those picks. Okay, bye.
We'll take a couple of seconds off your hands. Yeah. That's pretty nifty. Shout out Toronto, adding some shooting. Desperately needed some shooting. Also,
who's the shooter they got?
Grady. Also, SB Nation, we can see you. I want you to know that we can see you. No, like them adding some shooting. You'll see it on Twitter after the pod. It's fine. We can see you. But like them finally adding some shooting, that's going to be very important to whatever iteration of this Raptors roster is going to be. They just needed to add some shooting, and they did so. How'd you feel about Orlando's draft, by the way?
I like them adding size. Like, again, I like just their mindset to try and add some more size. Adding shooting, I thought was very important. But size, versatility, that's kind of been their bag. So I like them trying to get some more guard play, get some more wing play, have some more options for some of these lineups. I'm intrigued. What'd you think?
Like, I was cool. It's just like, man, this is a really stacked perimeter room right now.
It's a lot of guards. And it's like, okay, at some point, y'all going to have to make a decision because there's no way you're going to get all four of them. But, I mean, maybe it's a scenario where Anthony Black just takes the Gary Harris minutes. It's like, all right.
Cool. Thanks, Gary. I guess on a similar vein, the only other question I had for you, how'd you feel about Houston? I guess beyond the Amen Thompson
piece. I have to give a thumbs up.
Okay.
To get Cam Whitmore at that spot, I think that's just, it's low risk, high reward. If it works, it works. If not, and he's going to be motivated. If it doesn't, it's not like you reach to pick him. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'll let you state the concern because I think we're on the same page.
Yeah, it's similar to what, you know, the Şengün draft. So I was like, okay, I like all these picks, like in a vacuum. But now you have them on the same roster and you also mm-hmm. want them to develop. And it's like, okay, what are these reps going to look like? Like I was joking with you before the pod. It's like, hey, how you think Josh Christopher feels right now? Remember his rookie year in the flash that he showed in the second half of the season?
Mm-hmm.
And then we just really didn't see him last year. And now they have added Amin and also Cam. And it's just like, okay, well, what is it? Like, they're better than him. So, like, it's not bad, but it's just like in terms of, okay, what are we building out? And like you mentioned, low risk, high reward for Cam. It's like, yeah, in a vacuum, but like if he's capped at 16 minutes, is the reward high until they make another move to clear some space for him? Like, no. And that's not to say, like, I don't think he's going to get good or anything like that. It's just like there are only so many minutes you can play and only so many reps that you can give out. And so that's where it becomes, I like this pick. It is good value at 20. I agree with you. How much runway will he have? And so, like, I just want to see that. And we'll see. Maybe we'll just get through free agency. It's like, oh, okay, this makes sense. I feel even better about it. But like, that's where my mind kind of went early.
I feel so proud. Like you made this point before, but you are reaching the how can you develop all of y'all portion of the program. And I feel just so proud on the inside. Now, here's the tricky part. Mm-hmm. This is pre-free agency where the Rockets are going to do something.
They got a whole lot of money.
So if they like, if now it becomes Dylan Brooks and Fred VanVleet, you are Houston Rockets. Now it gets really interesting because, well,
boy, does it.
Some of those pathways kind of got shut down a little bit. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And they really seem to be in on Brook Lopez, which that intrigue, like that would worry me if I'm Milwaukee. I'm not going to hold you. That would worry. Like normally you see free agent plus bad team with a whole bunch of cap space. Like, ah, leverage play. I get it. But like, there's enough smoke with James Harden in Houston. I still think he ends up in Philadelphia ultimately, but like there's enough smoke with James Harden. There's enough smoke with Brook Lopez in Houston. Like, I don't think this is just leverage. Cause I think Brook and Şengün can play together. And so like, if I'm Philly and if I'm Milwaukee, I gotta take these negotiations at least like 5% more serious in light of what Houston can throw at some of these people in free agency. We shall see. Do you have free throws?
I do.
Oh, okay.
Would you like me to go first?
Yeah, sure.
So the NBA is going to open up Summer League with Spurs, Hornets, Blazers, Rockets, and the Lakers playing in Las Vegas. Genius or nah?
Hashtag I get it.
Okay. Is San Antonio's Francis team?
I think by default, yeah.
them just getting City Sissoko, by the way. We could talk about it a different day.
Okay.
Very typical Spurs. How many minutes would Grady have played for Nick Nurse last year?
14.
Total. Okay.
No. Okay. No, that's
fine. Okay. Julius Randle appeared on Paul George's podcast and said, quote, he's never been a film guy. I watch a lot of basketball, but never been a film guy. A, is this surprising? And B, doesn't that make him a film guy?
This explains the double teams. oh, boy. Because there is a difference in watching a game and watching film. I think the film is a slower slash more meticulous process. And so I can understand if he's watching hoop versus, hey, what does this matchup do? What does this team run? How do they defend this, etc. I appreciate the transparency on a serious note. Like, ultimately, if you just weren't that guy, you weren't that guy. And it's cool that you are becoming that guy, or at least I hope you are. Like, I think back to, it was like a Clubhouse Q&A heading into Asia's second or third season. So welcome back to the pandemic. Yeah, and she mentioned, like, she wasn't a big film person at that point. And now she is. And it also shows. It's MVP and Depoy and Champion, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, it's not new for players. Like I said, that's my main point here. And so it's better late than never, but like also my brother.
Did Mitch Kupchak's answer about Brandon Miller confirm that Michael Jordan made that pick and went home?
I also had a free throw about this, but I that feels very, yeah. I don't want to get in trouble with anybody, but yeah, that felt like, I think I'm, that was very much, don't ask me. That's him. But yeah.
Did the Wizards announce those courtside lofts knowing that Jordan Poole was going there?
It does make it a little bit funnier that that's the bit. Because I think everyone's immediate reaction to that news was like, why are y'all building this the year y'all trading Bradley Beal? And I was like, oh, that man by the average 28, 6, and 6.
What's funnier? Trading away Bradley Beal and acquiring Jordan Poole in this time span, or trading Bradley Beal, Chris Paul, and who? I'm missing someone. Kristaps Porzingis in the same week.
I think the former is funnier.
Okay. Does Halle Berry look the same in church or in the grocery store?
Oh God! That what a bar! What a bar! We can be honest. What a bar! As someone who personally has not seen her in either location, I would just assume yes. But I don't know. But that was a bar.
I'm done.
That's all you.
Amani Bates question for the next time.
Okay. All right. okay. Who's more fed up after their team's pick, Dame or Mitch Kupchak?
Well, because see, both of them had to know. There's no way both of them didn't know.
Exactly. But then we got that video of Mitch, hey, he ain't talked to them report from, yeah.
So, but hey, he's very involved in the process combined with, hey, he's not talking to them anymore is just a very funny dynamic. I'm going to go Mitch. Okay. I'm going to go Mitch because he's going to have to answer questions about something he ain't really do.
Gotcha.
So that probably was double annoying.
Okay. I had to edit this one after, like, the deal officially got done. But better stint, Chris Paul as a Laker or Malcolm Brogdon as a Clipper?
Malcolm Brogdon as a Clipper.
Okay. Since we were in a free agency mood a little bit earlier, I have a few of those. More sought after this summer, Dylan Brooks or D'Angelo Russell?
Dylan Brooks.
Okay. Do you rather have Caris LeVert or Kelly Oubre?
Ooh. Oh, no. What team am I? What kind of team am I? Can I get a context clue?
No.
Okay.
Your team.
Give me Kelly right now.
Okie dokie. Christian Wood or Mason Plumlee?
Give me Mason Plumlee.
All right. Josh Richardson or Dante DiVincenzo?
Ew. Give me Josh Richardson.
Okay. Rank these three free agents. Kata Bates Diop, Jay Crowder, or Utah Watanabe?
Give me Kata Bates Diop is third.
Wow.
Yuta's second.
Wow.
There you go, bud.
Then Jay Crowder first. All right, fair enough.
You don't respect the big boss man?
All caps. No, no, I'm just kidding. But the Mystics have won 3 straight, and they have a near 104 offensive rating in those games, which would rank 6th in the W. Are you feeling better about them?
You asking me? Yeah. I feel fine. My question was, hey, what is this? Just the guards play better? Dot dot dot. Do you feel better about them? What you mean? This is all spurred off the the Mystics offense is bad, and now they can't stop scoring and winning.
Hey man, I'm
just, you know what? There's a trend with you and W teams. You disrespected the Sun and they went off. You disrespected the Mystics and they went off. Can you talk about the Liberty here soon, please, pal?
The Liberty ahead, to win the title. How about that?
Oh God. All right.
Oh man. Okay. How many guard defenders are you taking over Jordan Canada this year?
Darn. Is there a follow-up question here?
No.
3?
Okay. I was about to say it feels like a short list. He's been getting after it. More demoralizing front court to play against. Vegas or Dallas?
It's still Vegas.
Okay.
But Dallas' front court is just going to beat you up. That's not going to feel good at all. But the Aces are, they're rude. You got to deal with the Asia Wilson fadeaway over your face and then deal with all of them defensively and then deal with it again on the other end and then watch their guards score. Nah, it's the Aces.
Okay. That's just like, man, it's like, woo, we got Tierra McCowan in foul trouble. Here comes Kalani Brown. It's like, ah, I see.
Hey, I go here.
It's just kind of wild. Last question I have for you. Aliyah Boston is the blank best center in the WNBA.
Oh, yikes. Yikes. Why did you do that?
I'm just asking questions.
I'm just asking questions, he said.
Yeah.
Boy. I'm going to say top 5 off the top of my head, but that feels strong. Mm-hmm. Ooh, nope. Nope, 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 nope.
Not the top. Steve going through the teams like, oh, wait a minute. Hey.
Nah, I can get 5. I can get 5. I can get 5. Number 5.
Number 5. Mm-hmm. All right, so follow-up question. Who are the 4 that you have ahead?
Look at this guy. In no particular order, I'm going Jonquel. I'm going Brittany Griner.
Mm-hmm.
Can I count NECA?
Yeah.
And then I'm going... I'm just going to count Asia.
Okay.
That's the 4.
Okay. Want to see... where you were. A follow-up to the follow-up. How much longer would Jonquel be better than Aliyah Boston?
Probably give it another 2 years.
Okay.
I've got 2 years.
Okay. That's all I had. If you don't have any closing comments, and I can do the whole outro and all that good stuff.
Nope. Let's get it going, man.
All righty. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Dunker Spot. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. So, subscribe and stuff if you haven't already. You can also check us at the beginning of each week on JJ Redick's YouTube channel. So subscribe to that if you have not already. You can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions in there. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. We are watching the WNBA pretty heavily since, naturally that's the basketball that's being played right now. Watching some wrestling. We will see what happens with the Usos and the Bloodline and all that good stuff. And whatever else we want to watch. We go to YouTube sometimes. We game sometimes. We just have a lot of fun bouncing around. Ultimately, it's a really fun, inclusive community where we just chop it up about sports, about what we're watching, but also about life. So if you want to hang with us, you can do that. The link should be in your description. Should be hyperlinks. You can just click on that. Enter your information. It is free with no shenanigans. And if not, if it's not hyperlinked, just copy and paste the link into your browser. Once again, it is free, no shenanigans. I want to say the playback app is now available for Apple users in the store, so if you want to do that. And with that, though, we will catch y'all next week.
This man got packed up by Degeneration X.